We're about to begin our very first shiur of Tisha B'Av. Everyone could be seated if you, unless you want to stand. As I mentioned during Kinos, sometimes it's a little difficult for us. Sometimes it's a little difficult for us to relate to how things were in other times. How we live in relatively affluent times. So a number of years ago, it seems like a different world, but when I was coming out of high school, there weren't so many boys from Los Angeles who would go to yeshiva. It was a rarity. And when I came out of high school, a number of my rabbeim, one of my rabbeim wanted me to go to one yeshiva, one of my rabbeim wanted me to go to another yeshiva, wonderful yeshivas, and all my friends were going to another yeshiva, a third yeshiva. And I really didn't know what to do. And like most teenagers, I was totally bewildered. And it happened to be Hashgacha Pratis shined down upon me. And my sister happened to be in Yerushalayim for Pesach visiting her in-laws. And she happened to stumble upon the small yeshiva in Sanhedria, not Sanhedria Merchevet, like it is now, as I mentioned before. And she went in, she met the Rabbi Kamen, and she was very impressed by the yeshiva. And she called me and she said, you know, I happened to find this yeshiva. It's called Etz Chaim. Seems like an American yeshiva. Maybe you should check into it. I did, and I found very interesting things about the Chofetz Chaim yeshiva, the study of Musar and so on and so forth. But I still didn't know what to do. So my other sister, had a friend, Leslie Mendelson. And Leslie Mendelson was a very interesting guy. He wasn't yeshivish in the classical sense, a wonderful person, a very clear view of things sometimes. So my older sister told me, go ask Leslie what he thinks about Chofetz Chaim. So I remember very clearly going to Mr. Mendelson, and I said, you know, one of my Rebbeim, Rabbi Grumman, wants me to go here, Rabbi Spurka wants me to go here, my Chaveim are going here. And Fagi heard about Chofetz Chaim. I don't know that much about Chofetz Chaim. Could you tell me something about Chofetz Chaim? So I remember Mr. Mendelson looked at me and he said, you know, the Rashiva Chofetz Chaim in Yerushalayim is Rabbi Chait. If you could go be a Talmud of Rabbi Chait, and you don't do that, you must be crazy. There must be something wrong with you. And Baruch Hashem, I took his advice, and as they say, the rest is history. And yesterday, as I mentioned, Rabbi Chait passed away. I knew that Rabbi Chait was having hip surgery. Rabbi Chait, unfortunately, hasn't been well for a few years. Rabbi Chait, as Baruch Cohn, who's a lawyer in town, was a Rav, and then became the Reshiva Chofetz Chaim in Yerushalayim. And Baruch Cohn depicted Rabbi Chait and his family as the royalty, a royal family in Klal Yisrael. And it's impossible for me to describe Rabbi Chait. But as I mentioned during Kinos, one of the things we have to reflect upon when we talk about the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash is loss of the leadership of Klal Yisrael. And as I also mentioned, sometimes we don't link into the loss of the Beis HaMikdash well enough. So I felt yesterday that when Hashem decided in his infinite wisdom to take Rabbi Chait away from us, that Hashem was sending me a message to link into Tisha B'Av more. Remember what it's like to feel devastated. So Rabbi Goldberg Zayin Gezunt is a very close Talmud of Rabbi Chait. Something, one of the many things we share in common. And again, as we talk about the destruction and dissolution and feeling desolate, so this is obviously something that we have to think about. So we're very fortunate that today Rabbi Goldberg was going to speak about iPod, iTouch, I don't care, but he has changed his topic, and he's going to tell us about what this incredible person, Memories from a Talmud, about Rabbi Chait.
My thanks to Rabbi Summers and to the Shanker and Kirschbrook families for sponsoring this year, these recollections, and to, as I said to Rabbi Summers, for providing a place where I can share some recollections of Rebbe Umori, and to do it in a place where I have a feeling that what I have to say will be understood and appreciated. As the years go by, I feel a little bit more and more like Honi Hamagal, you know, who fell asleep for 70 years and came back in a door with his viewer. There was nobody to talk to. So to know that there are people like your Rav and like this shul, so it's meaningful for me, therapeutic for me, and I hope that it will be a zechus for the neshama of my Rebbe as well. For years, in the bracha of Rofei, I add names of people who need a refuah shleima. The first of those who have been on my list for many, many years was Moshe Dov ben Chana Pesha. So today, it was time to say that bracha again. And yeah, I guess I didn't want it enough. But it's a day that one is allowed, and I'd like to say that these words are not hespedim, because the concept of a hesped is one that comes with tremendous responsibility, one which I am certainly not capable of bearing. But I hope that I will be able to create a picture of the personality and the character of a very, very great person, a person who was to me like a father. And now we need to, I need to change in my mind that name to now be Moshe Dov, Harav Moshe Dov Ben Shmuel Zev, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. And speaking of Rebbe, it seemed to me that the theme, or the word that I wanted to share was the word lev. Rabbi Chait, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, was about the heart. Chazal say, Kasha misosan shel tzadikim, that the death of the righteous is as difficult in front of Hashem, kshviros haluchas, as it was the time when Moshe Rabbeinu broke the luchos that Hashem created. The death of the tzaddikim is like the shviras haluchos. Reb Dessler, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, explains that the luchos, the tablets that Moshe Rabbeinu brought down from Har Sinai, that those luchos are in the shape of a human heart. It's two of them, two parts of the heart. And so it seems that Chazal were telling us that when a tzaddik is nifter, when a tzaddik leaves the world, that it's like the heart has been broken. It's a breaking of the heart. Furthermore, Chazal tell us, and I think it was actually the subject of the first of the Tisha B'Av of talks that I had the privilege of sharing in this shul, Chazal say that misasan shel tzaddikim, that when Hashem takes the righteous from us, it is kasha lefonov, it is difficult in front of Hashem, as sreifas beis Hashem, as difficult as the burning of the house of Hashem, and it's as difficult as the mea tochochos hasur shtayim, as the 98 tochochos which exist in the Mishnah Torah. Because by the burning of the Beis HaMikdash and by the Tochocha, it says that Hashem would do things which were pela, which were amazing, awesome and amazing in their power. But by the Mises of Tzadikim, the death, the taking of Tzadikim, that would be Hafla Vafela. Not just Pelo, but Hafla Vafela. Amazingly amazing. And Chazal tell us, the Navi tells us, that the reason that terrible destruction of the Beis HaMikdash came about, what was the Pelo, what was the cause of the Hafla Vafela, was because the Klal Yisrael was involved in learning, but the learning that they did was begether mitzvahs anoshim melumodo. They were mitzvahs of Hashem, that they were mitzvahs that people did out of habit. They did them without thinking. And we discussed this many years ago at length. What does it mean, mitzvahs anoshim melumodo? Well, in essence, mitzvahs anoshim melumodo means that we have the intellectual knowledge. We recognize in our brains that we need to do mitzvahs, but there's something missing. And what's missing is the heart. We have the yodata hayom. We have that we know it in our head. But what's missing is the hashevoiso eluvovecho. And Shlomo HaMelech said of the words of Torah, he said, uksovam, and write them al luach libecho. Hashem wrote them on the tablets at Har Sinai. We have an obligation to write them on the tablets of our heart. Kasher misosan shel tzadikim, it's hard for us to lose tzadikim because a true tzadik is a person who is an integrated Torah personality. He is a person who knows all there is to know in Torah. But he's not just a person who knows all there is to know. He's not a person that Chazal term a Talmud Chacham she'in bo derech eretz. There is such a thing. He's a Talmud Chacham, but he has no derech eretz. Talmud Chacham she'in bo das. He's a Talmud Chacham, but he has no das. As the Chavos HaLevavos turns him, and the Chosid Yaivetz, a chamur toin svarim, he's like a mule who's carrying books. Yesh devar kazeh. But then there is the tzaddik, who is the integrated, whole, complete Torah personality. He's really the person who knows, and he's able to bring that to his heart. He wrote them on the luach of his heart. And therefore, when we lose such a person, we lose an example of what a Jew is supposed to be. And we find ourselves faced with shallow impressions and shallow imitations of what the Torah really wants from us. Rabbi Sheit suffered for many years from a heart ailment. He had his first heart attack when he was running up the stairs to the Beis Medrash to wake up, to the dormitory above the Beis Medrash to wake up the boys. That was his minug. He would jog, exercise, balanced human being, and he was running up the stairs. He was the veker. He was the one who would wake up the boys. That's when he had his first heart attack. And he suffered from arrhythmia and many ailments of the heart. A few years ago, in one of our last conversations, he told me that the doctors keep asking him how old he is, because they are amazed that a person who had a heart that was as weak as his heart, that he was still alive. And they said, we're wondering technically, how long can a person with what you have, how long can he live? How old are you now? So it was a kasha to the doctors how it could be that his heart was still pumping. So I have a teretz. The teretz is that his lave kept his heart beating. His lave powered his heart. That the doctors had no explanation for. Except for maybe one that I'll mention at the end. Chazal say, "Kol anachalim yotzim liyam," that all the rivers empty into the sea, and the sea does not get filled up. Doesn't matter how many ice caps melt. All the rivers flow to the ocean; they flow to the sea, and the sea does not. You can't fill up the ocean. So Chazal say, "Kol toroso shel odom." all of the Torah of a person. It flows to the heart, and the heart does not get filled. There's no gvul, there's no end to the capacity of the heart to contain Torah, to contain Yirat Shemayim, contain Avas Abriyas, to contain Avas Hashem. So Rebbe, who filled his heart, filled his lave with all of those things, his physical heart kept beating. His physical heart was powered by the lave, the integrated heart, which was Rebbe. How did he succeed in doing it? How do you go about, because of Maluach Libecha, how do you write what we know? How do you go about writing things on your heart? What type of person do you have to be? Well, in essence, Rebbe was the quintessential, the consummate Baal Musar. And as such, he was a person who despised superficiality. He was a real person. He was a person of depth. And he was an amazingly understanding, kind, and tolerant person. But there was a place where he didn't have so much tolerance, and that was for shidchias, that was for superficiality. I remember the first time I saw him. I was learning in a different yeshiva at the time, and an old friend of mine from yeshiva was then learning in the Chafetz Chaim Kolel. His name is David Jaffe, and he had a son, and he invited me to the bris of his son, which was happening in the yeshiva. So I went to the bris, and I came downstairs for the seuda, and that was the first time that I heard Rabbi Sheitz speak. And I kind of grew up Yiddishkeit-wise in Yerushalayim. And I had never in my life seen a person or heard a person like Rabbi Sheitz. First of all, he got up to speak. He was wearing a black suit, but the suit was perfectly tailored. He had a beard. The beard was perfectly trimmed. Amongst the Jews that I had grown up with in Yerushalayim, they had many milas. The phrase put together was not necessarily one of them. I didn't know that a rabbi could look like this. I was impressed. Rabbi Shea told me that in the days when he was in Kolel, the Kolel didn't pay that much. And he told me that many times, literally, they didn't have food to put on the table. But he was always impeccably dressed. And the reason, he said, was because Reb David told him that people out there don't see what you're putting on your table. But people do see how you're dressed. And it's your obligation when you walk in the street to create a Kiddush Hashem. So they can't see someone who's slovenly or dirty or unput together. It's Tzelem Elokim. And Rebbe used to quote about the Altar from Kelm, his Rebbe's Rebbe's Rebbe, that the Altar from Kelm people said about him that they wished that their tefillin were as shiny as the Altar from Kelm's shoes. And he told me that Reb David, when the boys were in yeshiva, before they would go out, he would stand and he would paskin on how they looked. Be sure that before they went into the street, they had the countenance and the look of an Erlich Ben Tur. So I saw a person like this, I was amazed. And then I heard him speak. And it was amazing. He was not illiterate in three languages. He was eloquent. I heard him once give a drasha in Lashon Kodesh. I'd never heard him speak in Hebrew before. And I said, this is going to be interesting because I never heard Rebbe speak in Hebrew. He was as eloquent in Lashon Kodesh as he was in English. When he wanted to emphasize a point, when he wanted to attract attention to his words, he would lower his voice. I never heard him raise his voice in a drasha. I never heard him raise his voice, period. One time somebody was, I'd spoken somewhere, and somebody commented to me, he goes, it's interesting, you know, we're the first rabbis you ever heard who doesn't scream. I said, well, my Rebbe didn't scream. If he wanted to attract attention, he would whisper. And you had to lean forward to listen. And it was worth it. So I remember where I was sitting. It was in the Chadar Ochel of the yeshiva in Sanhedrin Merchevet. And I remembered seeing him, and I remembered listening to him. And I remember to this day sitting there and thinking, I want to be like him. I'd like to be like him. At the time, I was in a different place. It happened to be that yeshiva was not going so well. I had some serious questions that needed to be answered as to what to do with the future of my life. And I went to Reb Noach Orlowick, Shlito, and he told me there are two people in the country that I know of that can answer your question. One of them is Reb Nachman Bulman, Zecher Tzaddik Livracha, and the other is Reb Moshe Chait, Zecher Tzaddik Livracha. At the time, for various reasons, I went to Reb Bulman. And Reb Bulman, I have to say, gave not just hours, but really days of his time to try to help me resolve the situation. And at the end of the discussion, he told me, there are two places in my mind where you could go. One is to Yeshiva X, and the other is to Reb Moshe Chait. And I asked him, what would be the difference? What would you recommend? So he said, well, I'll tell you. If you took a bacher from Yeshiva X and you stood him next to someone who's learning by Rabbi Chait, and you asked a third person, who has more Yirat Shemayim, the person from Yeshiva X or the person who learns by Rabbi Chait? You just stood the two people next to each other. You asked your average Jew, who has more Yirat Shemayim? So everyone would tell you it's the one from Yeshiva X. Look at the color of his clothes, look at the style of his hat, look at the, you know, obviously this is a person, look at the way, you know, his movement when he davens, this is obviously the person whose firman has more Yirat Shemayim. And you know what Reb Bulman said? That person would be 100% wrong. And he told me, he said, I think you need a place where the Yiras Hashem is where it's supposed to be. Aluach libecho. That the Yiras Hashem is on the inside. And not something that supposedly can be acquired in a store and worn on the outside. So I went to meet Rabbi Chait, and he invited me into his office. I remember this conversation also very well. And he said to me, Shlomo, why do you want to come here? And what's wrong with the place where you are? So I told him, Rebbe, I don't know another word for this. I don't really speak Yiddish, but I don't know a word in English or a word in Hebrew that really translates it. But there's this word in a pejorative sense, which is called frumkeit. Sometimes it's called frumshtick, which means religiosity on the outside and not real religion on the inside. He sat forward in his chair. And I have to tell you, from that moment on, he told me he told over this conversation many times to many people. From that time, I think it was love at first sight. And, you know, I certainly loved him, and he loved me. Which is not unusual, because that's the way it is with hearts of people. And he told me, I am, however, he said, very close to the Rosh Yeshiva of the yeshiva where you are at. You need to go back to him and get his permission and ask him if it's okay for you to come. And with his reshus, we'd love to have you. And so I got the reshus. I came back. I remembered, you know, very excited. I took a feher with Rabbi Kinarik. Should be well. he sat down. I heard it was Chafetz Chaim. I heard the Chafetz Chaim. They get into all this depth in learning. So I prepared all the, I could all the Rabbi Akiva Eger's and the Kutzos HaChoshens that had to do with the Gemara, and Rabbi Kinerik prepared me on Gemara, Rashi, and Tosfos. Nothing fancy. I got to the Tosfos, and the Tosfos was one of those ones that has an introduction, and then Tosfos says Ve'im Tomar. And Rabbi Kinerik asked me, why did Tosfos have to give the introduction before he asked the question? To which I said, is that a rule? So he told me afterwards, he said, you seem a little bit inexperienced, but you learn quickly. So you'll go to the Rosh Hashiva Shir. I was thrilled, went home, and told Mrs. Goldberg, I'm going to the Rosh Hashiva Shir. Not only that, the Kollel salary was $180 a month, and if you come on Thursday nights, you get an extra $20 a week. There were guys on Thursday nights, you know, they came in hospital beds. You know, you didn't want to miss out on the, you know, on the $20. That was huge. Those were the good old days. At that point, I entered the yeshiva, and that changed my life. Since we're speaking about Rebbe, who is a person of great, expansive heart, we need to examine a little bit, and I'd like to do it somewhat in his own words, where this feeling about the disparaging of shidchius, of superficiality, came from. Where did he hear it from his Rebbe and his Rebbe's Rebbe, and how did that become part of his life? Yeah. Rabbi Orlowitz said one time that how do you know that somebody's your Rebbe? He said that someone's your Rebbe when you can hear him say over the same things year after year and it doesn't get old. You look forward to it. I remember there were times when his Rabbi Sheitz Wednesday night shmuzim, which were not just shmuzim, they were events. The Kollel wives came, community came. It was his Wednesday night shmuz was an event. And on certain parshios, the guys would sit before he spoke, and he would say, I wonder which one he's going to say. What's he going to play now? Yeah. We had our favorites. So one of the favorites was his explanation of the first of the Ma'amorim in the Shmuzim of the Altar from Sobotka, in which he asked the question, if you take a piece of matter, and you take that piece of matter and you split it in half, and you divide that half into a half, and that half into a half, and that half into a half, and you try to get down to the basic component of what is this universe made of, what are you going to find? So the Altar answered it based on two pasukim, that the pasuk says, Hashem b'chochma yosad aretz. That what's the foundation of the world that Hashem created? It's chochma, it's wisdom. And then the Altar quoted a pasuk from Iyov, v'hachochma me'ayin timotze. That where do we find chochma, where do we find wisdom? We find it in the ayin. You find it in that which you can't see. So the Altar said that if we want to get down to the basic building block of the universe, that which the physicists want to find out, what is this universe made of? You know what it's made of? It's made of ayin. It's made of nothing. It happens to be that the modern physicists say the same thing, that the world is held together by forces. There really is no matter. It's all held together by forces. Why I can't put my hand through the shtender? It's kasha. But if you get down to the basic components of the universe, it's Hashem. It's a force. It's not matter, it's not material. Wisdom is in that which you don't see. He used to quote the famous saying of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, that when the Isha Hashunamis met Elisha Hanavi, she went to her husband and described him as an Isha Lokim. He was a man of God. The Gemara asks, how did she know? How did she know that he was an Isha Lokim? And the Gemara gives several reasons, ways that she was discerned that he was a man of God. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said, you see from here that in those days, a person who was an Isha Lokim did not publicize it. Because when she came back and told her husband he's an Isha Lokim, the Gemara wants to know, how did she figure that out? He wasn't wearing the sign? I remember once in Yerushalayim, you know, when there, people were giving speeches or hespedim, they have a whole list of the gedolim who were going to be speaking. So they had a whole list. It said, Harav Hagon Ploni, Harav Hagon Ploni, Harav Hagon Ploni, Harav Hagon Ha'amiti, Reb Michal Feinstein. Kol Hadavarim Yegeim. All the words are empty. If he's a Rav Hagon, he's a Rav Hagon, then there's the true Rav Hagon. Everything else is just a title. Chochma Me'ayin Temotzei. The real kedusha, the real wisdom that exists in the world, is not with what's out on the streets, what's publicized, what's easy to see. It's found in the places where you can't see it. Margalu Bapume de Rebbe was the shmuz that he would give around the parshios of kedoshim and also parshas Bahar, where we find that there are several mitzvos. Lifnei Seva Tokum, the mitzvah of not to make a slave work of Odas Perech, the Isser of Ribis, Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Mikshol, several mitzvahs where when the Torah recounts those mitzvahs, it says afterwards, V'yoreisa Melokecha. You should do these mitzvahs, V'yoreisa Melokecha, and have fear of Hashem. Rashi says, why does it say by these mitzvos, v'yoreisa melokecha? Rashi says, because in all of these mitzvos, it would be possible for a person to talk his way out of why it is that he didn't do them. About the mitzvah of standing up for an elderly person or a Talmud Chacham, he could say, I didn't stand up, I'm sorry, I didn't see him. Who will know whether he saw him or he didn't see him? As far as Ribbis goes, he can construct it in such a way that it looks like he's borrowing the money from a non-Jew, and not really, it's not really coming from him, it's coming from non-Jewish entity, and therefore it's not really Ribbis. How will anybody really know? By Lifnei Iver, I thought I was giving him good advice. I thought that, you know, oil was going to go up. I didn't know oil was going to go down. That's why I bought all his oil futures. How would anybody ever know? So Rashi says, on every time that the Torah says, V'yoreisa melokecha, Rashi says, Dover hamosur, it's talking about a matter which is handed over, lelev. It's about something that exists within the heart of a person. And therefore only Hashem is going to know. Because the reality is, even though someone once says, you can't fool all the people all the time, you can fool some of the people some of the time, and all the people some of the time, and some of the people all the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time. The MS is, if you're really, really good at it, you can fool all the people all the time. To the tune of billions of dollars. Or trillions of dollars. You can fool all the people all the time. But you can't fool Hashem for a microsecond. A nanosecond. V'yoreisa melokecha, dover hamosar l'leiv. Where does Yiras Hashem live? It lives within the heart of a person. So Rebbe would tell us, he remembered one time when he was in the kolo, and they learned in that kolo with tremendous mesiras nefesh. Money there wasn't. Kolelim there weren't. It was the only one in America at the time. The idea was that even if a person learns in yeshiva, so in your early 20s, you go out and become a rabbi, and to be in the kolel, you already had to have had smicha. So here were men who already had smicha, who were continuing their learning in kolel. And it was during the war years. So the poverty and the bizyonos that they suffered to stay in that kolel were not simple at all. With what they got in those years, they helped to build the Klal Yisrael, but it was not simple during those years. So he said he remembered one time when a Jew came in, a Jew from another Zerum, another stream of from Jews, came in, poked his head into the Beis Medrash, looked around, and said, I don't see any Yiras Hashem here. And he left. And Rebbe would say, he didn't see any Yiras Hashem. Dover HaMosel Ulev. How did she know he was an Ish Elokim? Chochma ma'ayin timotze. He didn't see any Yiras Hashem. The author goes on to say that if you take a person who's davening, two people who are davening, and you want to say who's the person who's davening with more kavana. So the author says, you'll certainly say the person who's, you know, shuckling back and forth, who is nav and nod, he's around the base measure, she's full of fire, he's the person who has all the kavana. Whereas the person who's standing straight and speaking pleadingly, his body still, as if he's oymed, as if he's standing in front of the king, is it? Where's the hislavus? Doesn't have the kavana. So the author would say, based on ha-chochma ma'ayin timotze, remember the wisdom, the yira, isn't what you don't see. So he would tell over the story of Reb Chaim Brisker, that it was known that Reb Chaim Brisker used to daven quickly. Now if you take a look at the first Reb Chaim on the Rambam, we can rest assured that Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzadik U'Kadosh Levracha, understood what tefillah was. He used to daven relatively quickly. So the boys in the yeshiva felt that it was not lefi kvodo. Didn't look good that the Rosh Yeshiva finished his Shmon Esrei so quickly. So they actually went to him and they suggested that even when he finishes his Shmona Esrei, he should just wait a while before he takes his three steps back, so it'll give the impression that he's spending a longer time in his tefillah. So Reb Chaim told them, I already do that. Rebbe, he stood like a soldier in front of the king. It was Slobodka. He had Slobodka from his Rebbe, and he tried to give Slobodka to us. He stood as if he was truly standing in front of a king. Where did this depth of heart? He had it as Yerusha in Musar from his Rebbeim before him. And as part of that Yerusha also, he developed his depth, his Amkus, maybe primarily due to his depth in learning. Rebbe's Shiur, we never had a Shiur in which Rebbe got up and said Shiur. Never happened. His shiur was in his office. Some guys on the couch, some guys pulling in chairs, Rebbe behind his desk, and it was Melchemta Shel Torah. Throw out a question. Argue it out. Refine our thinking. And show us how that we thought we understood the Gemara, we actually had absolutely no idea of what it was that we were talking about. And if you were learning the Gemara, and you didn't ask Tosfos' question, then you didn't learn. And if you ask if you're learning Tosfos and you didn't ask the Marsha's question, then you're not learning. The depth, the precision, the time he took to examine the Gemara from every possible angle showed us what depth was about and helped prepare us for some of the issues that many of us would be facing when we left the safe confines of his office and the base medrash and tried to figure out how to make sense of the world. When I was still in the kollel, Rebbe suffered a type of stroke. And Baruch Hashem, it did not affect his thinking, but it did affect his eyesight. And he was struggling to be able to learn. We bought him at the time, before they had the computer-generated Sfarim that they have now, but we bought him a big chumash, so it'd be easier for him to see. And he told me one time, he said, Shlomo, I'm concerned. He said, because I'm afraid because my problem in seeing, I'm not going to be able to learn in depth. And if I can't learn in depth, then I'll become a shallow person. If I can't learn ba'amkas, then I'll become an ish shidchi. I'll become a superficial person. And that for Rebbe was a fate that he couldn't bear. One of the areas of superficiality that bothered him the most was what he perceived happening in the Baal Tshuva movement, where he saw in his perception that there were people who were becoming frum. He dressed them up, he said, like a mannequin in Mea Shearim, and you teach them to say Baruch Hashem, and the person who is makar of them puts a notch in their belt. It's another Baal Tshuva made. And he was concerned because he felt that these people did not really have the background and the follow-through to be able to prepare them for the test that they would face when they went out and had to face a real, frum life. So nobody's telling them about school tuitions. They don't tell you that in Or Sameach. There's a lot of tests out there. Reb Bulman, about this same issue, said, what are you going to do? He said, Kiruv Rechokim is a war. And in any war, there are casualties. And we have to know, in fighting this war, there are casualties. The Rebbe felt that more needed to be done to be sure that people, once they made the commitment to Torah and to mitzvahs, were given the ability to be able to continue learning, continue knowing, continue growing, to be able to face the challenges that they would be facing in life. One of his most famous rushes was based on the Alter from Kelm, who said about the Akedas Yitzchak that the Psukim say, Vayelchu Shnehem Yachtov, that Avraham and Yitzchak went together. And the Medrash says, not like Rashi, this is different than the way Rashi learns, but the Medrash says, Vayelchu Shnehem Yachtov, Zeh Lishchot, Avram went to Shecht his son, and Yitzchak Lishachet, to be Shechted. Which begs the question that a few psukim later, it comes out that Yitzhak Avinu turns to his father and he says, Aye ha-sela ola. He goes, where's the sheep? Where are we going? And then Avram speaks to him and says, Hashem will show us ha-sela ola b'ni, and it seems to calm Yitzhak down and he's able to go on. The Alter from Kelm brings the Medrash that the Medrash says that when they were about to do the Akedah, so the Satan came to Avram Avinu, the Satan knew he had a lot to lose if Avram is Matzliach. So he came to Avram Avinu and he said to Avram Avinu, do you know what you're doing? He goes, this is the son that was given to you when you were 100 years old and you're going to shecht him? Crazy? Avram Avinu said, Afal Pike. Because you know your whole life you've dedicated to telling people that Hashem does not want people to sacrifice their children? And now you're going to sacrifice your son? Avram Avinu says, Afal Pike. The Satan says to Avram Avinu, you think it can't get any worse than this? You think Hashem can't come up with a test which is even greater than this? Maybe he'll do something even worse, even harder. Avram Avinu says, Afal Pike. Even so. Sultan gives up on Avram Avinu, starts on Yitzchak. He says, Yitzchak, you know where you're going? Your father's going to murder you. Afal Pike. Finally, the Sultan says to Yitzchak Avinu, do you know that if your father goes through with this, you have a brother, Yishmael? Do you know that if you die, all of your toys are going to go to your brother Yishmael? He's going to get your toys. And at that point, the Medrash says that all of a sudden Yitzhak Avinu is confused. He says, wait a second, I didn't know that. Wait a minute, think about that. Turns to his father. He says, where are we going? Ayeh so la'oilo. Avraham Avinu has to calm him down. Hashem told us he will show us haselo la'bini. Remember, this is about you. And then the pasuk says, Vayechu shneim yachtov. They walk together. So Rebbe says, in the name of the Alter from Kelm, he says, you see from here two things. One is that it's easier for a person to be Moser Nefesh, to give up his life for Hashem, than it is to defeat a petty jealousy. Chazal said this about Yitzhak Avinu. It would not be something that I would say. If it wasn't for their words, we would not be allowed to say it. To give up his life, Al Kiddush Hashem, Akedus Yitzhak, so he was willing to do it. But the jealousy of his brother? Mesiras Nefesh, yes. He's going to get my toys? Just a second. And then Rebbe would say, that you see from here that the greatest person in the world can be willing to give up the greatest chus in the world, Akedus Yitzchak, that we daven every day, Hashem listen to us, b'schus Akedus Yitzchak. The greatest person can be willing to give up the greatest good for what? For a pile of toys. And so we'd ask us, what's your toys? We know what's the great good. What are we giving it up for? Rebbe used to say, based on the Medrash, Lule Ruvain Haya Yodei, if Ruvain had only known what the Torah would write about him, he wouldn't have just taken Yosef from the bor, he would have put him on his shoulders and carried him. If Aaron HaKohen had known what the Torah would write about him, he wouldn't have just come happily to Moshe Rabbeinu, he would have brought a marching band. If Boaz Haya Yodei, if he'd have only known what the Navi was going to write about him, he wouldn't have given Ruth just a few grains, he would have brought her a Seuda Kiyata Melech. Rebbe used to say, the most hard words for a person to think of in the world, the most disparaging, most difficult words in the world, if I had only known. If I had only known. Rishoyim Moleim Charata. Rishoyim are full of regrets. Don't be full of regret. You do know. We do know. We forget. But we do know. Kasum aluach libecha. So we know it. But we have to try to write it in our hearts. I found this here in Medrash Eicha. That Hashem is, so to speak, being maspid himself. Maspid the Chorban. And he says, Oy l'melech, woe to a king, shehit sliach, that he was successful, b'yaldusoy, b'katnuso, that he was successful when he was young, u'b'skenuso, but when he was old, lo hitzliach, when he was older, he wasn't successful. Hashem seems to be bemoaning the fact that in the early stages of the Klal Yisrael, there was great success, like we said in the Kina this morning, as Rabbi Summers explained, when we left Mitzrayim, it was one way. When we left Yerushalayim, it was a different way. Woe to the king who was not successful in his old age. In the Perush of the Eitz Yosef, he explains, what does it mean successful? He says successful means that he was mashpia. He had influence. Hatzlocha is the ability to be mashpia, to have influence on others. According to that definition of success, Rebbe Zecher Tzaruch Livrocha was an Ish Matzliach. Before he became the Rosh Yeshiva of the Yeshiva of Chafetz Chaim in Eretz Yisrael, he was in Rabbanus for 25 years in Crown Heights and in Far Rockaway. He had a shiur that he gave on Friday evenings after the Suda on Shabbos, which was attended by hundreds of people. I try to think about, you know, here, getting people to go out after a Friday night Suda, you know, to come to a shiur, what would that be like? The reason he started the shiur was because there was a conservative rabbi who was an unbelievably eloquent speaker. He knew Chazal. He was unbelievably impressive orator. And he was attracting hundreds of people to hear him. And it seemed like he was speaking pure Chazal, and it was apikorsis mitechila ve'atzof. So Rebbe said, I have to do something. So he started a shiur with Ramban, Yalkut Shimoni, Divrei Musar, in Rebbe's inimitable style. And he brought the people from that shul, from that shiur, over to his shiur. In his shul, it wasn't a day that there were yeshivos, and you know, day schools like there were today, like there are today. So he had in his shul Talmud Torah. The Talmud Torah had hundreds and hundreds of Talmidim. The other streams of Judaism, yeah, that had their Hebrew schools, everybody was coming, yeah, to Rabbi Chaich's Talmud Torah. And from his Talmud Torah they went to yeshiva, and from his yeshiva they went to kolam. This was before the Baal Tshuva movement. So he told me one time, Baruch Hashem, without any special programs and without other things, Baruch Hashem, he said, we brought a few people to Torah. Through the JSS program at Yeshiva University in which he taught, he was of the first people to teach high school and college students who were drifting from Torah and to bring them back into Yiddishkeit. He was unbelievably successful as a Rav. When they made the Sudas Preda, when he left his Rabbanus, I mean, he mentioned many times, it meant so much to him, that Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, came to the Suuda. Why did he leave the Rabbanus? He gave three reasons that I heard. One was he was once standing on the bima here, and the president of his shul was about to punch the sweetest guy in the shul, you know, in the head. And Rebbe, who was in good shape, had to dive off the beam and catch his arm so that the president of the shul wouldn't punch out this other guy. That was one reason. Another similar story was that one sukkah he gave the famous drosha about there are arba minim, and there are four different types of Jews, those who have Torah, those who have Maisim Tovim, those who have Torah and Maisim Tovim, and those who have none. And that's the Arava. The Arava neither has smell nor taste. So there are some Jews, and on Sukkot we take all the different Jews, those who are Avayonim and those who are the kosher Jews, and we bring them all together, Be'oguda Achas. And it was a big shmuz on Achdus. As he was leaving the shul, he heard one of the balabatim say to another balabas, you know, you heard the Rav shmuz? He says, yeah, it was good, wasn't it? He goes, yeah, you know what? You are an Arava. That was number two. Strike three, he told me, was one day, because they used to, not just in the shul, but there were rabbis who would do these things in rotations. He once had to officiate at five levayas in one day.